Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So yesterday we told you there was a second trove of classified documents in Biden's possession, but at that point we hadn't learned the location or the nature of the documents. We subsequently learned the location yesterday, and the operative three words that are being used to explain to the country what has occurred here: seriously, inadvertently, and transparency. So why don't we take those in turn? He takes classified documents seriously, takes classified information seriously. That's what Mr. 10%, the big guy, President Biden, has said. That's what his spokeshuman, KJP, has said from the podium over the last couple of days. Takes them seriously. This is the president yesterday talking about the classified documents that were found in his home by his attorneys.
Classified material next to your Corvette. What were you thinking?
Let me, I'm going to get a chance to speak on all this, God willing, soon. But as I said earlier this week, people, and by the way, my Corvette's in a locked garage. Okay? So it's not like you're sitting out in the street. But anyway, yes, as well as my Corvette. As I said earlier this week, people know I take classified documents and classified material seriously.
Clearly. I mean, that vintage vet is his prized possession. If it's secure enough for his vintage vet, then it's clearly secure enough for our nation's secrets. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Seriously, inadvertently, and transparency.
That's their defense strategy.
We have been transparent about this from the outset. This is KJP providing the explanation of just exactly how they have.
I want to say that we have been transparent here. That is why the minute that his lawyers found those documents, they reported it. They reached out to the archives and the Department of Justice, and they did that voluntarily. And they were not compelled to do it. They did it voluntarily. Now, I want to step back a little bit as you're asking me about the timeline. Look, the lawyer said we have been working closely with the Department of Justice and coordinating a search that was still ongoing to ensure any additional documents were in the proper possession of the government. After that search, after the search concluded last night, we released a statement disclosing the facts from that search, as you all know, this morning. This is all part of the Justice Department process, and you heard the Attorney General speak to this today. So we are being very careful to be fully cooperative with the Department of Justice and providing details as appropriate as part of that process.
So why did you fully describe the documents when we were firstly asked this week?
Because, I actually answered that question. I said because there was a process happening that was currently ongoing, and I'll refer you back to my comments that I made.
Yeah, they're being fully transparent. Clearly not with the American people. The full transparency would be notification publicly of what you had discovered privately and explaining in real time what processes you were undertaking to rectify the situation. So the first trove of documents that's discovered 6 days before the November election, we didn't know about.
And then this one just discovered December 22nd, but we just found out about it.
Yeah, and yeah, and on Wednesday, again, in the interest of transparency, and I suggested this. We talked about this when she was asked about auditing the documents. Are there any documents anywhere else? So she clearly knew that there were, and they were soon to be disclosed. And this is what she said:
has there been any kind of like audit that's been done of where he may, where there may be others that he doesn't know about?
I'm just not going to speak to this. I'm going to let the process continue. It's an ongoing process, and so I'm just not going to speak to this from here. It is more prudent and more appropriate for my colleagues at the White House counsel.
Yeah, she was clearly apprised, and the White House counsel, maybe it was on advice of counsel, maybe it wasn't, maybe it was political advice and counsel. Regardless, they collectively chose not to disclose that there were more documents coming.
And why were the documents separated out? Why was what next was Corvette, one in his closet, then they found another classified document in another office in his Delaware home?
Seriously, inadvertently, and transparency.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could also text us at 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Right. The inadvertently repeatedly said that the president inadvertently removed documents to his home, the garage, the library, ultimately to his phony think tank at the University of Pennsylvania. Jonathan Turley last night addressed the inadvertence claim that is being invoked by the White House.
The most interesting aspect about today is that the White House repeated almost mantra-like this inadvertence defense. I mean, they have really latched onto this and said this was an inadvertent misplacement of these documents. The problem is that the facts don't really support that, because the assumption is that all of these documents were taken from the executive branch when Biden left as vice president. That's in 2017. We know that the Penn Biden office didn't even open until 2018. So we know that some of these documents were moved at least twice. But the other interesting thing is that they were not just distributed to different points, they were also divided, right? You've got one document that was found in the library, others in the garage. So the question is, why were these documents sent and used in different places? It suggests that they were, you know, knowingly divided. And that's going to be a question that the special counsel is going to have to look at. We know the president was working on a book that dealt with Ukraine and some of these other subject matters. So if the president actually saw these documents, it'd be hard to miss that they're classified, because they reportedly had TSSCI classification markings. I've worked with classified material for decades, and I can tell you it's pretty darn hard to miss that. So if he did work off these documents, inadvertence goes right out the window, and it looks more like an effort to deceive the public. You know, the White House press secretary said this was inadvertently misplaced. Well, it had to be repeatedly inadvertently misplaced, and that becomes more difficult the more times you inadvertently misplace something.
Yeah, you know, it's the old the guy fell on a knife. He fell on a knife 5, 6, 7 times. He just kept falling on the same knife. These documents just kept being inadvertently misplaced by supernatural forces. Nobody did it intentionally. There's no responsible party. They just kept moving around from the White House to the Biden house to the phony think tank.
The garage, yeah. Next to his muscle Corvette. I mean, this is anybody else. I just think, and I said this, I think, on Tuesday, I think they're doing this to get him out of office. They need something, because the Hunter Biden laptop isn't enough. They need something more to get somebody else to run for president in 2024.
Well, speaking of Hunter Biden, good piece by Phil Wegman and makes the obvious point, but it's one to be made regardless. Phil Wegman from RealClearPolitics.com, who's part of the White House press corps, he had some questions for KJP yesterday, that Hunter Biden had access to that garage.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And the reporting from the first trove of documents is that at least some involved Ukraine, and Hunter Biden was on the board of Burisma. So, you know, this is why Peter Doocy from Fox asked KJP about a visitor's log to the family compound of Biden, Inc., and this is what he got in return.
When will the White House release a log of visitors to the Wilmington House?
You know, Peter, you've asked this question, or as your colleagues have asked this question before. Let's not forget what we did here in this White House. We instituted something that the last administration got rid of, which is putting out the White House, making sure that there was a White House log, extensive White House log, so the American people got to see.
House where again, there is potentially again, unsecured, well, classified material.
Again, I am telling you, we did something that the last administration got rid of, which is instituting the White House logs. Did you ask the last administration why they got rid of the White House logs?
Okay,
let's go. Let's go.
Well,
did Fox did? Go ahead. Go ahead.
So there you go, non-answer to that question, you know, in the interest of transparency.
I mean, the oddity is that we have a former White House occupant and the guy who's presently at the White House both being investigated at the same time.
Well, there's special counsels now appointed to investigate both. Philip Durr from Maryland has been tapped by Merrick Garland to keep up appearances and investigate Biden. But we know...
Because
we know from media coverage, we also know, just generally speaking, these are two completely different cases.
Yep.
They have nothing in common. The reason is very simple. One involves Trump and the other does not. And that makes them completely different, and they're to be held to completely different legal standards.
Well, I feel better with Trump because at least Trump had Secret Service with him, and it was in a secured location with a camera pointed at it.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, talking about Mr. 10%, the big guy, President Biden, and his spokeshuman, KJP, this great Karnak, that magnificent routine they've been doing. Seriously, inadvertently, transparently, and then you blow open the envelope, and it's... How I keep my vintage vet as well as the nation secrets in mint condition. That's the argument that's being laid out.
And he was so cocky and arrogant when he talked about it, too. Like, you know, don't you know I have a vintage Corvette? I was on Jay Leno with it.
Let's talk a bit about the media coverage of this, because they're doing a good job yesterday of trying to keep up appearances of even-handedness and general inquisitiveness with respect to the handling of classified information from this president after spending the run-up to the November 8th election in hysterics over the handling of classified information by the former president. Just a reminder of a little bit of what that reporting sounded like when the matter related to former President Trump.
The seriousness of the potential threat to national security information, I just don't know what to say.
If he was in possession of classified documents, those are by definition potentially harmful to our national security.
These are really classified and a really a threat to national security.
That really jumps out to me as a national security threat.
This is a national security crisis.
The extreme risk that Trump was willing to take with our national security.
That's right.
Michael Beschloss, who was my selection for most idiotic quote of the year last year in his description of what could transpire on November 8th if Republicans took both chambers, which was an authoritarian regime, your children being imprisoned and then killed.
Oh, that's right. I remember
He tweeted out in response to the contretemps over President Trump's handling of classified documents. The Rosenbergs were convicted for giving U.S. nuclear secrets to Moscow and were executed in June of 1953, intimating that because the reporting was some of the documents in Trump's possession had to do with the nuclear program, that he would possibly be eligible for not just prosecution, but execution. So that gives you a little bit of a sense of the tenor of the reporting on President Trump. And now yesterday, you have all of these reporters getting uppity with spokeshuman KJP. Why? Because they're good reporters that are going wherever the facts lead, and they want to make sure the same standard they apply to President Trump is applied to President Biden.
Isn't that cute?
Yeah. they're doing it, number one, because they have to keep up the facade so they can utter that statement that I just made without laughing. And number two, they're embarrassed. You're supposed, you know, when you're the comm shop of the Democrat Socialist Party, as the D.C. press corps is, you're supposed to be apprised of those things. You're supposed to be brought along. You know, keep us in the loop so we can run proper interference, so we can produce proper spin. But when we get caught flat-footed, then worse than you looking like a bunch of arses, we look like a bunch of arses, and we don't like that.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. And Merrick Garland, I mean, he's backed into a corner to assign a special prosecutor, which he did, because John Lausch announced yesterday that he's retiring, going to go into the private sector. And so this Phil Durr is taking charge. And here's Merrick Garland.
The extraordinary circumstances here require the appointment of a special counsel for this matter. Yeah, that absolutely. Office was not authorized for storage of classified documents.
Okay, garage isn't? But the vet's in there. If it's good enough for the vintage vet. So Merrick Garland is portraying a serious law enforcement official.
Oh, yeah. Everybody looked very serious yesterday.
Everybody has to play their role. So everybody's going to play their role to keep up appearances, to keep up this facade that the Justice Department, the FBI, the D.C. press corps are not hopelessly politicized and completely in the tank for the left, because they are. But we're going to keep up appearances. If we can at least fool half the people, then maybe we can all hold on to our phony baloney jobs in 24 the way that so many unfortunately did in 22. We can perpetrate another fraud, maybe with the help of, you know, bending an election law here or there as well. Yeah, we're supposed to buy this—the so seriousness of the approach being taken by the media or by Merrick Garland's Justice Department. That's the story you're giving us.
And who wants to read a book on Ukraine anyway? I mean, some of the documents they said were intelligence from the UK, Ukraine, and Iran.
Okay. One other thing I have to get to, and then we'll take your calls. Mm-hmm. Because just when you think that an institution like the D.C. press corps is the biggest clown operation in town, you still have Congress. You still have Congress. And you still have congressmen like George's Hank Johnson.
I can't believe he still has his job.
To offer this perspective.
But I'm suspicious of the timing of it. I'm also aware of the fact that things can be planted on people.
Oh, boy.
Places and things can be planted.
Oh, yeah.
Things can be planted in places.
Yes, places and planting.
Then discovered
and
conveniently.
Bomb's gonna tip over.
That may be what has occurred here. I'm not ruling that out. But I'm open in terms of the investigation needs to be investigated.
You know what I think here? Yeah. You know what happened here? Trump planted these documents at Biden's phony think tank in his garage in the library. This is part of a Trump false flag operation, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I don't know that. like Hank Johnson, I'm just suggesting it's possible, and there needs to be an investigation to see if that's in fact true. My theory is in fact true. Planting of classified documents. That's the Hank Johnson defense. It's possible Mark Furman is involved.
Oh, that's...
I don't know.
And where's O.J. Simpson?
And, of course, mainly at play Hank Johnson so that we can offer the first installment of Hank Johnson's instant classics since he has been in Congress.
This is a island that
never gets
at its widest level is, what, 12 miles from shore to shore? And at its smallest level, location, it's 7 miles between one shore and the other. Is that correct?
I don't have the exact dimensions, but to your point, sir, I think Guam is a small island.
Very small island, about 24 miles, if I recall, long. So 24 miles long, about
what's
7 miles
latitude?
Wide at the least widest place on the island, and about 12 miles wide on the widest part of the island. And I don't know how many square miles that is. Do you happen to know?
I don't have that. Figure with me, sir. I can certainly supply it to you if you'd like.
Yeah, my fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
We don't anticipate that.
The best part of that is the commander of our Pacific Fleet at the time, Robert Willard, saying, in response to something so inane, we don't anticipate Guam tipping over if we station more Marines on the island, because I understand that it doesn't just float around the water, that it's a landmass. But anyway.
And people reelected him anyway.
Of course they did.
Hey.
Of course they did, because he gets to the bottom of things. He asks the questions people are afraid to ask, like, will Guam tip over, or was this these classified documents, were they planted on President Biden's place? Asking the questions people are afraid to ask, Hank Johnson. Now there's a dogged fact finder. Jordan in Forest Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Who keeps papers in their garage?
Not
now,
me.
I keep papers in my garage. It's the recycle bin. It's the recycle bin. So half the press asks the president, do you keep your tax returns in the garage next to your nice, shiny, beautiful 67 bet?
Thanks for the call, Jordan. They're in the library, too. I mean, it's sort
and
of
it
like,
one document was in his office.
Sort of game of Clue here. Okay. Colonel Mustard is in the library. Vince in Crete, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
With the wrench.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. I can't believe you guys are missing the real important point of this whole story,
uh-huh.
And that's
yeah.
what is the carbon footprint of Joe Biden's Corvette?
Exactly. It's a great point.
It's not an EV, yeah.
When is he going to get it retrofitted to be an EV? The 67 Stingray or something? Yeah.
I just wish it was red so we could play the song Little Red Corvette by Prince.
Who paid for that, by the way?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question.
Biden
it's
Inc. Is that a Biden Inc. company car? Can you write that off? Mike in Plano.
Hey, Amy, you mentioned the difference between Trump and Biden is that Trump made you feel better by having his record stored in a secure facility in Mar-a-Lago. Well, that's not the main difference, Amy. The difference is that Trump was president and had the authority to classify and declassify.
Yep.
Biden was vice president and didn't have the authority. That's why what happened to Trump was a charade and why what Biden did was a felony. I sure hope you understand that.
No, but, I do. I'm just saying that the documents were separated out in different places, so he knew exactly what he was doing. I'm not buying any of this bull jive that it was inadvertently misplaced. And you're right. I mean, what Biden did was a heck of a lot worse than what Trump did.
Although we still,
and I don't even think what Trump did was wrong.
We still need an answer to questions about what he declassified or didn't declassify, when he did it, and so on and so forth. I'm talking about Trump, but yeah, that's
Biden has no power to declassify.
That is a distinction. The more important question is: are we going to see Biden and Trump in a jail cell together or on a debate stage together?
That's a great
question. Very much an open question now.
No, it's true. I mean, never before in our country's history has a former person in the White House and the current person in the White House been under investigation.
We call those persons presidents.
We call them presidents. Yeah. I'm just saying it's, you know.
What if we split the difference and they do their debates from jail?
That'd be great. What about cage match? As you always say, two enter, one leaves.
Like Johnny Cash at Leavenworth or something.
Clown world we're living in.
Marvin in Burlington.
Good morning. You know, I think it's sort of the shiny object that everybody's looking at, the classified documents here, there, and everywhere. And so we don't focus our attention on the real issue is all the money's changing hands between the Chinese Communist Party, Chinese Communist financial interests, the Penn University, and the kickbacks to the Biden household. And those are the really interesting questions to me is who's taking money? Where is that money? Who's recording any of that money? That's the heart of the matter. Has Joe Biden actually sold out the United States to China? I think we all know the answer, and I think that's why a lot of this attention is being focused on these documents.
Well, the document, that's a fair, that's a good question, Marvin. Thanks for the call. But the documents, if you have a conscientious special counsel, which I think you do here, the documents should lead you to those questions and potentially those answers, depending on their contents and their usage and by whom they were used or reviewed. The documents are sort of source material upon which to build a case, to ask those questions if they prompt those questions, and to answer them or to, you know, seek answers to them based on that evidence. And so I think it'll be very interesting if you get a real investigation. And here's the key. You can have a special counsel do this work, all the due diligence that he wants to do, green-lighted by Merrick Garland, whether it's Jack Smith or this Durr guy from Maryland, the competing special counsels. But ultimately, it's Merrick Garland's call. Don't forget that. It still all levels back up to Merrick Garland. So he's got to figure a way out of this corner he's painted himself in.
New Trier's finest.
Jimmy on the Kennedy.
Yeah, I think people are getting focused on the numbers, this and that. But if you listen to it, they have China. Maybe those documents relate to China, some secret agreements that Joe and Hunter have for their payoffs and how to funnel the money. You have your Ukraine. Maybe it's information on Burisma, how they're going to cut things up, divide the money, and send the money. And you have UK. That's interesting. Wasn't about the same time that the rush to collusion that Joe Biden set in motion on that office with the Michael Flynn and Obama and Susan Rice?
Yeah, but
what do these documents pertain? What are they? Are they just green energy, or are they specific to countries and deals? What are the documents related to?
Well, according to NBC and Fox, the documents that were found at his think tank pertain to the UK, Iran, and Ukraine.
Right, but we don't know those details. We don't know if that reporting is accurate. We don't know about the second trove of documents. Certainly, I doubt any materials would be kept. Would be so obvious in indicating illicit activity. But the bigger question is sort of what Ducey was getting to when he asked about the visitor logs to Wilmington. Was somebody who is not authorized to access classified information using classified information in furtherance of their business interests, like Hunter in Ukraine, for example? Those are questions that hopefully will be asked and answered. John in Crown Point.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Love your show. Love Amy more. Mm-hmm. Hey, with Trump, they knew he had the documents so they wanted him back. But with Biden, did they know he had the documents out? And also, too, who found them? Like, a maid in the garage? Or
well,
were they looking for
him? Well, his attorneys found the first batch.
Thanks, John. Yeah, but that's not the question. The question is, why were they looking for the documents? And NBC's Kristen Welker amazingly actually asked that question. And this is the response you get from KJP.
And he's said this before, classified documents and information. He takes that very seriously. And you see,
the garage is an appropriate place to store classified
documents. I'm not going to go into what he thinks or how he.
What sparked this?
Again, I'm just not going to go into details from here. I'm not going to go into specifics from here. This review is continuing. It's ongoing. I would refer you to Department of Justice.
Right. What sparked this? We're not going to tell you. And we made a counsel available. They've given lengthy statements. Right. But they won't tell you why they were looking for documents at his phony think tank, why they were looking for documents in his home.
And he's had them for 6 years.
There had to be an animating event. And we don't know what that is. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I hate to be fatalistic about institutions, particularly institutions charged with upholding the rule of law. But you have to be realistic, too, don't you? And so as we're talking about the relative handling of a president who allegedly mishandled classified information vis-a-vis the raid on Mar-a-Lago versus the kit gloves that are being provided Joe Biden and company.
Yeah, why wasn't the media tipped off when they went and explored his Delaware home like they were for Trump?
Right, after months of non-disclosure, including another pre-election non-disclosure from the Biden family, perhaps in cooperation with some in the media, perhaps not. Either way, let's just start with Biden, Inc. and the Department of Justice and the FBI. But it's not just on this matter, of course, we know. And I just want to sort of reset the table on some other issues so we don't forget about them, in the hope that maybe if enough pressure is brought, enough continued focus on some of these other matters is offered, that you will get something approximating accountability, even begrudgingly. And that's not good enough, but I don't know. I mean, you're going to have to make some decisions. We as a free society are going to have to make some decisions about what we want from our political leadership and how we want our government structured and what powers we want entrusted and to whom we want them entrusted. And so I go back to this. When the Dobbs decision was leaked last year.
Yep. Never find out who that leaker was?
That's still pending. Mm-hmm. And Justice John Roberts said, we'll handle it internally. We don't need the FBI. Okay, well, where are we at with identifying that person and offering some accountability from the highest court in the land? Nowhere. Well, we don't know where we are because there's been no update, though, as to where we are, if anywhere. And the FBI, in the wake of that decision, was charged with investigating acts of domestic terrorism, although they didn't call them that. 78 pro-life pregnancy centers were attacked, including the firebombing of a pro-life center in Buffalo that injured two firefighters.
Jesus.
The FBI, after more than 6 months, has arrested actually zero individuals. Those responsible for death threats or actual physical violence, zero. 78 attacks.
Wow.
Had that been 78 attacks on black churches or Jewish synagogues or Democrat Congress people's offices?
Or Planned Parenthoods. Even one attack would be leading the news.
Zero. So much so that now a pro-life operator of pro-life pregnancy centers, Compass Care, is hiring their own private detectives, is working with the Thomas More Society to hire those private investigators to find out who attacked their offices, also offering, also allowing themselves to collect the FBI's $25,000 reward. That's the only thing the FBI seems to have done. Let's throw a reward out there so that we can at least indicate that we attempted to do something. But that's not their priority. Attacks on American citizens, depending on who the attacker might be and who the victims are a high priority or a low priority?
Or no priority, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Arson, I mean, come on, you could figure that out. There's got to be surveillance cameras, guys, come on.
Accountability. I mean, that's really what this all boils down to. Do we have individuals in the upper reaches of government who believe they're accountable to the people who put them there, believe they're accountable to the laws that govern our country? And, you know, the initial returns are not very good, are they? Matt Taibbi released Twitter Files installment number 14, The Russiagate Lies. For example, here, and again, considering how the FBI, possibly the CIA, was involved in this, you had the upper echelon of the Democrat Socialist Party involved in this from the get-go, because, of course, it was Cam Clinton and Mark Elias that were responsible for concocting the Steele dossier, which allowed Jim Comey to get all sorts of FISA warrants to improperly surveil the Trump campaign. And then it just continued on after he was elected. I mean, I don't need to restate all the details. You get the gist of it. I mean, this is the talking about the lead law enforcement intel agencies in the country, talking about the President of the United States, duly elected. Taibbi reports, at a crucial moment in a years-long furor, Democrats denounced a report about flaws in the Trump-Russia investigation, saying it was boosted by Russian bots and Russian trolls. Twitter officials were aghast, finding no evidence of Russian influence. Quoting from documents from Twitter officials, "We are feeding congressional trolls," talking about Adam Schiff and company. "Not any significant activity connected to Russia. Not any significant activity connected to Russia. Putting the cart before the horse, assuming this is propaganda / bots." Twitter warned politicians and media they not only lacked evidence, but Twitter had evidence the accounts were not Russian. That was roundly ignored. On January 18th of 2018, Republican Devin Nunes submitted a classified memo to the House Intel Committee detailing abuses by the FBI in obtaining FISA surveillance authority against Trump-connected figures, including the role played by the Steele dossier I just mentioned. The Nunes assertions, as you might remember, would be virtually all of them were verified in a report by DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz. Nonetheless, national media in January and early February of 2018 denounced the Nunes report, calling it a joke. And by the way, they all, reading from the same playbook, they all literally use the same language. January 23rd of 2018, DiFi and Schiff published an open letter saying the hashtag, quote, gained the immediate attention and assistance of social media accounts linked to Russian influence operations. Feinstein and Schiff said the Nunes memo distorts classified information, although they didn't call it correct. Blumenthal from Connecticut followed suit. We find it reprehensible that Russian agents have so eagerly manipulated innocent Americans. Feinstein, Schiff, Blumenthal, and the media all pointed to the same source, a dashboard created by a former FBI counterintel official named Clint Watts. The dashboard, which featured a crude picture of Vlad Putin deviously blowing evil red Twitter birds into the atmosphere, was vague in how it reached its conclusions. Inside Twitter, executives panned Watts, this former FBI counterintel official, and the dashboard he created. But that was the only source that everyone was using. The Democrats preening before the cameras, like Schiff and Blumenthal and many others, and the media reporting on them. The global policy comm chief for Twitter, I encourage you to be skeptical of Hamilton 68, which was the dashboard. The Hamilton 68 take on this, which as far as I can tell is the only source for these stories. Mm-hmm. And it goes on from there. The smearing of Devin Nunes, even though his report was backed up by the Inspector General of the Department of Justice, who actually seemed to be an independent guy, at least during the Trump years. He was also critical of the conduct of Comey and McCabe, although that went nowhere. All of this fraud, maybe it was just ends up just being political fraud by the politicians, but it's something more serious when law enforcement throws in. Now, Twitter is not the hero in this story because, of course, these are all internal communications that we only know about thanks to Elon Musk. It's not like there were Twitter whistleblowers who came forward when Adam Schiff was omnipresent on the cable news channels, spinning all sorts of yarns and telling us for literally years on end, the smoking gun would be delivered at some point in the not-too-distant future. Never was, because there never was one. Nobody came forward at Twitter. It was all internal. Because why? They didn't want to be a party to the fraud, some of these executives at Twitter. They certainly weren't going to cross their fellow travelers in Congress, because they were otherwise happy to do the bidding in so many other instances, as has also been documented by the Twitter files. That's what's complicated about it. Everybody has a little bit different appetite for this sort of political skullduggery, even at a place like Twitter under the great stewardship of Jack Dorsey. But just basic accountability. All this talk about threats to our democracy and the truth and you know, mandatory courses on media literacy so young people can distinguish disinformation from the truth in this age of disinformation. To the extent that we're living in an age of disinformation, it's almost all perpetrated by the arbiters of disinformation. The institutions in D.C., the Fourth Estate, and all those other institutions that are controlled by their fellow travelers who take their cues from the Fourth Estate and these law enforcement agencies and intel agencies, because we're supposed to have, you know, so, right, this is not a new insight here, but the irony of all of these baby boomer flower children being useful idiots of the FBI and CIA because they like that John Brennan is a communist and was the former head of the CIA, and they like who the target, some of the targets were of the FBI. And so everything goes now. And then you see the just how far the situation has devolved when you have these companion cases of Trump's handling of classified information, followed a few months later by Biden's handling of classified information. And you can understand why people can't make heads or tails of it, throw their hands up in the air and say, the hell with it. The whole thing is rotten to the core, which is what people are doing. And again, the left is much more animated than the center right when it comes to pursuit of state power. And so this chaos that reigns, that sensible people find so distasteful, ironically benefits the perpetrators of the chaos. Because reasonable people withdraw from the arena and they continue unapologetically to advance on our rights. And the sort of underlying foundation of this free society, of the American experiment. I mean, there's the silliness, and it's mildly entertaining for a moment, and then you have to contemplate the seriousness that's belied by the silliness. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So consumer price index rose 6.5% in December, year over year. In 2022, we had the first 6 months where price increases, inflation increased.
Right.
And the last 6 months, inflation decreased. The average CPI for 2022 was 8.1%. So now prices are stabilizing down, but the question is, at what level do prices stabilize in 2023 and 2024? 4%, 5%? We still have a real Fed funds rate that's negative, so Fed policy remains highly stimulative, and Powell, the mystic who heads the Fed, said the Fed will continue to move in a restrictive direction. So where does this go? By the way, that's looking at the overall, but those of you who go to grocery stores, I'm not one of them.
I am.
Food, the CPI for food at home, it's down, but it's still at 11.3% year over year.
You can't even find eggs. I tried to find eggs yesterday, and they're up 60% from what they were last year. You can even get your hands on some.
Yeah, there's a whole, that's a specific good where there's a whole argument going on between the farmers and the grocery store chains. But the larger question of irrational exuberance about a steady, albeit incremental, decline in inflation over the last 6 months.
There's nothing to celebrate. I guess how much, all right, I want you to answer this question. Family of four, we went to McDonald's. Nobody ordered anything extravagant. Guess how much it cost?
Can you order anything extravagant at McDonald's?
Well, you could, you know, add on a shake or a McFlurry or...
Okay.
$60. Well, Potbellies, the four of us, $72. I mean, that's a, that's reality, folks.
I've noticed the price of my Chateaubriand has ticked up a bit, too, and I wasn't happy about that.
Stop it.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Timothy Fitzgerald. He's a professor of business econ at Texas Tech, the Red Raiders, the home of, or alma, not home of, alma mater of Pat Mahomes.
Oh, that's right.
In case you're thinking of NFL
the guy
playoffs.
We passed up on the draft, yeah.
Yeah.
You know that guy.
Trubisky would work
Watson.
Out better. Yeah.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
He also served as the chief international economist at the White House Council of Econ Advisors in 17 and 18. Professor Fitzgerald, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm happy to be with you.
So what about the stabilization of prices? We're seeing this incremental decline that I described, but where does it stop? I guess in part that's predicated on where does Jay Powell stop with moving in a restrictive direction?
Yeah, I mean, I think actually, you know, one of the things that I focus on is the fuels market, and one factor that has helped drive inflation has been oil prices, and
yeah.
Oil prices exploded in 2022 in part because of recovery around the world, but also because of the war in Ukraine and geopolitical tension around that. And we had a period of very high crude oil prices, which led to high prices at the pump for gasoline consumers. Fortunately, for the holidays, those consumers were able to enjoy a little bit of price break as we go into the holidays, and that's helping to take some of the momentum out of broader inflation measures across the economy.
But the gas prices are back up. I mean, here in Chicago is about $2.99 before Christmas. And then after Christmas, we got back, and it's $3.79 again. And I know they've added some state taxes that were due, but what's that about?
Well, one of the key things to remember in the oil market is that no consumers actually buy crude oil, right? Everybody needs gasoline or diesel or maybe even indirectly. Yeah, you're going to consume heating oil or jet fuel or something like that. And so the refining capacity is crucial to understanding how the price at the pump is going to evolve. One of the really interesting things when you look at the refining sector is to notice the dramatic reduction in overall capacity for oil refining across the country over the last couple of years.
And let's understand why that is, because, of course, the president has explained it to us, as have many members of Congress. That's evil oil companies trying to artificially inflate the price of gasoline to rapaciously fleece the American people so that they can go to their golf clubs on their private jets, right?
Well, you use more adverbs than I do. It is clearly the case that reducing the amount of available refining capacity is not going to help the consumer.
As we see refineries
close and not reopen, it just leaves consumers more and more at the sort of whim of the market.
But in your estimation, why are oil companies making those decisions?
Well, it could cost money to run a refinery. And as oil companies earn profits, they reinvest some of those profits back into updating and expanding refineries. Refining margins are getting pressed. Costs are going up. Financing costs are going up. Other kinds of compliance costs are going up. And you know, politicians are talking about trying to seize windfall profits from the oil companies. All three of those factors together all point in the same direction: less refining capacity and more exposure of the consumer to volatility in the crude oil market being translated to volatility at the pump. And furthermore, what you were talking about before, with that then plays into inflation and just makes it harder to keep the cost of everything from, you know, eggs to soup to nuts all the way through the economy. It's going to depend on the price of fuel.
When you make capital investments, you're looking long-term, particularly investments on that scale with respect to refining capacity. Is part of the explanation also the big three automakers in this country all moving in the direction of not producing gas-powered automobiles anymore? All the three big automakers here are talking about EVs in the near term for as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, I think that's actually a big part of it. But it is important to remember that even if we get to a place where it's hard to buy a brand new internal combustion engine, people are going to continue to buy and sell internal combustion powered vehicles in the secondary market. And so we're not going to be quote unquote off of oil in, you know, some short politically motivated horizon. This transition may take place. I mean, we're heading more and more in that direction. EVs are getting better, but they're still not a perfect solution for everyone. I mean, you all live in Chicago, right? You know that it gets cold there, and you know that the range anxiety for EVs goes way up when you got to run the heat in the car. Mm-hmm. And more even than that, think about how much it costs to buy a new EV. It's multiples of what it costs to buy a gas-powered car. And so the people who are able to afford the luxury of an EV can be insulated from gasoline prices, but regular people and working people are going to continue to be susceptible to the variation in the oil and gasoline markets. That's the point that I think is really important, because as you point out, the oil companies are looking at the long-term demand and saying, well, maybe it is and maybe it isn't worth making these kind of investments, particularly in an environment where it's a little bit harder to do so because of financing costs or other kinds of compliance costs for the refining industry.
Yeah, and of course, it bedevils me to no end that you have people who are working, people who are more impacted, subject to, negatively impacted by these policies, underwriting, you know, five-figure subsidies for people to buy $90,000 EVs. That reverse Robin Hood from all of those would-be Robin Hoods is interesting to me as well.
If you could find me a five-figure EV, I'd be excited. I mean, they're open to six figures.
Right.
Yeah, right. Fair point. One other thing, too, the stopgap measure, that's what I'm terming it. You tell me if that's accurate. The stopgap measure by the Biden administration to go to Venezuela to get oil supply, to go to the Saudis and beg OPEC for more production. This is a way to avoid having to encourage, incentivize, increase refining capacity here, because we want to move in the direction of EVs. We want to move in the direction of the marginalization of fossil fuels. And so in the interim, we'll just go to, you know, theocracies and dictatorships in South America to get our oil supply.
Yeah, but remember that that's buying crude oil, okay? And so then we're going to bring that to the United States and try to refine it in our refining complex. We don't have the capacity to add more oil. It doesn't matter whether we buy the oil on the market from places that we don't share our values, or if we encourage more production at home, we're still going to hit that refining capacity constraint. Let me give you a really good example of that. In the summer, the administration was very concerned about how oil prices were high after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And so they tapped into a stockpile of crude oil that's called the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, that is basically a buffer for oil markets. It turned out that as they released that oil from the reserve, they had to export the oil because there were no U.S. refiners who were able to take on that extra capacity. And so it doesn't matter whether that comes out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve or if we buy it from Venezuela or if we produce it ourselves here in Texas or in the Gulf or wherever in the United States, without the entire supply chain for fuels from crude oil all the way to the gasoline pump, then we're not going to have the ability to actually help the end consumer, and we're going to lack the ability to control a key factor that's driving inflation across the entire economy.
So should Americans expect the sort of volatility and then spike in prices that we saw last summer, again this summer and into the future until this capacity issue is resolved one way or the other?
I think you would be naive to think that gasoline prices are going to remain low as we head deeper into 2023. And furthermore, if we don't do something about the refining capacity, I think we can expect these swings in gasoline prices attributable to refining capacity constraints for the foreseeable future. I mean, we're probably at least decades away from really beginning to have an energy transition that's going to help the average American. And it's great that people who have four or five cars can have an EV parked in their driveway and feel good about it. But until the people who have to use a vehicle to get around can actually get to where they're not going to depend on having fuel in the tank and have a, you know, a viable electric vehicle option, then I think you're going to look at continued swings in these gasoline prices that are attributable to the refining capacity that we're losing.
Well, I mean, as long as Gavin Newsom feels good about himself, that's the important thing to me. Timothy Fitzgerald is professor of business econ at Texas Tech. He served as the chief international economist at the White House's Council of Econ Advisors in 17 and 18. Professor Fitzgerald, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Phil Wegman from RealClearPolitics.com, among those in the White House press corps, querying White House spokeshuman KJP yesterday about the second trove of documents, which we knew had been discovered and reported, but as of yesterday's show, we didn't know where they were located or the nature of those documents. We know more after yesterday, where it was disclosed the documents were in the big guy's garage, in the big guy's library. But look, if his garage is safe enough for his vintage vet, then it's safe enough for America's secrets. That's what I say.
Classified material next to your Corvette. What were you thinking?
Oh, I love it.
I'm going to get a chance to speak on all this, God willing, soon. But as I said earlier this week, people, and by the way, my Corvette's in a locked garage. Okay,
oh,
so it's not like you're sitting out in the street. But
anyway,
yes, as well as my Corvette. But as I said earlier this week, people know I take classified documents and classified material seriously.
Obviously.
Oh, I mean,
you don't think he wants to protect his vet? Is that what you're saying?
And the vet, by the way, was a wedding gift from his father, just so you know. It's a 67 Corvette.
So touching. Who has the remote controls to the, who has the garage door openers?
Yeah, there you
to
go.
To the Biden. All right, so here's Phil Wegman now with that disclosure, following up with KJP to understand a few things and get you know, the typical and repetitive process arguments that KJP has been hiding behind for the last 3 days.
The position of the White House that legally the president could have just held on to these?
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying they did the right thing, period. I wouldn't read into it. I'm saying that they did the right thing and they did it voluntarily, because it is the right thing to do when you find these types of documents, to indeed reach out to the archivists and reach out to the Department of Justice. So they, and outside of that, they have been cooperating very closely with the Department of Justice. It is the, and rightfully so, they did this.
She said in the press conference, the lawyers did the right thing and they didn't have to. Well, actually, they did have to. But then she said, well, don't worry about whether they had to or not. The important thing is that they did the right thing. Uh-huh. So then did the president do the wrong thing, or whoever is responsible for moving classified information from the White House to his home, to his phony think tank, did they do the wrong thing? We don't know yet, because there's a review going on, and she won't answer that question. Any idea how many people had access to those documents?
Does the administration have any idea, between the garage and the Biden Penn office, just how many people could have gotten their hands on this? Or, you know, are we to assume that the White House doesn't have an estimate? That
there's
they don't
an
know?
Ongoing review on this, yeah, and I would refer to the Department of Justice.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's
going to see part, here, ongoing review.
Part of their commitment to transparency. Again, the watchword, seriously, inadvertently, and transparently. Those are the three pillars of the Biden administration's handling of classified information. She was asked again about Mr. 10%'s statement the other day that He was told by lawyers not to ask about the documents, and then he sort of intimated the same thing yesterday when he said, someday, God willing, someday soon, God willing, I'll be able to talk about this, as if it depends on God rather than just your forthrightness. This is her response.
The president has said that his lawyers have advised him not to ask what was in these classified documents. I don't understand the purpose of that. He's the president of the United States.
Because we're trying to do this by the book. We're trying to do this in the appropriate way. And so that's what I would say to you. We have his team has been complying, right, cooperating with the Department of Justice, and I will leave it there. I'm not going to go beyond.
The book says that he can't look at this. What would compel him or push him in that direction? Because you've said it repeatedly. What, I guess, as he tries to do this by the book, as he tries to do the right thing, you know, what are his lawyers looking at that says, yeah, don't look at this classified information that was found?
Again, there's a process here. The process is that when the lawyers found that these documents existed, they reached out to the archive and also the Department of Justice. That is the process, and they have been cooperating closely, working closely with the Department of Justice. And now, as you've heard, the Attorney General made a statement today, and so I would refer you to them. All right, everybody. Thank you.
All right, that's a wrap. That's all I can take for one day. So again, classified information was inadvertently moved around all over the place, from the White House to the House to the phony think tank. That happened inadvertently. Though, remember, he takes the handling of classified information very seriously, at least as seriously as keeping his vintage vet in mint condition. And that was in it. So he's serious. It was inadvertent. And then this whole effort from the discovery of these documents, we don't know what prompted it, back pre-election, has been a exercise in transparency, even though we weren't told about it until this week, even though we weren't told about the second trove of documents that was discovered in December, even though earlier this week Karine Jean-Pierre knew about the second trove of documents, but she played coy about it.
She lied.
These are all illustrations of the Biden administration's commitment to transparency. So again, they take it seriously. They've been transparent. And to the extent that anything inappropriate happened, it happened inadvertently by some people we don't know who.
And he's had these documents for 6 years, folks. And there was also, besides the office and then his garage near the Corvette, one document was also found, quote, in stored materials in an adjacent room.
Right. And I think Colonel Mustard was in that room.
With the pipe wrench.
Kevin Brock, former assistant director of Intel for the FBI, former principal deputy director of the National Counterterrorism Center, joins us. Kevin, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, Dan and Amy. Nice to be with you. I understand that the Corvette is being polygraphed this morning to make sure that it didn't spread any of that sensitive information. Yeah,
it's interesting because, I mean, I think you're going to appreciate this comparison. You and Hank Johnson are right on the same wavelength. Representative Hank Johnson, who famously worried about Guam capsizing with too many Marines being deployed there, he has the same thing. You know, are we looking at everybody? You know, this is a great Law and Order episode. You're looking at Joe Biden. You're looking at his inner circle. What about the Corvette? What about a false flag operation? Listen, Kevin.
But I'm suspicious of the timing of it. I'm also aware of the fact that things can be planted on people. Places and things can be planted. Things can be planted in places.
See, Kevin, you may not understand this as only a former assistant director of Intel, counterintel. So things can be planted at places. There are places where things can be planted, and could be Trump, could be Mark Furman, could be some sort of a vast right wing conspiracy, false flag operation. I mean, we don't know.
Well, thank you for comparing me to Hank Johnson. I appreciate that.
I thought you would.
Yeah. Joe Biden has got a problem here. He effectively, and others have said this, but it's true, he's blown up any chance of a case against Donald Trump by the Department of Justice. If they were thinking of charging Trump, I don't think they seriously were, but if they were, that's gone away. Joe Biden could declassify those documents now that he's president. And he couldn't when he was vice president, but now he could. But how can he do that without exonerating supporting Donald Trump's position in his case? Look, the spokes the press spokesperson for the president isn't entirely wrong. There is a process for reporting classified, mishandling of classified information. It happens all the time, unfortunately, and the process is pretty benign, and people are, you know, they understand that these things happen, but that, you know, again gives rise to the question, why was Donald Trump's house raided in an early morning search warrant when it was unnecessary to do so? And I maintain that to this day. But there's two dynamics here, Dan, is that you've got the mishandling of classified information, which the Republicans understandably are going to wring every bit of political hay they can out of that. And they're doing so now. But it has also drawn attention to this Penn Biden Center that was stood up after Joe Biden left the vice presidency. They hired him, paid him nearly $1 million over 2 years to be a once in a while show up professor. And during that time frame, the Chinese government donates about close to $50 million to the University of Pennsylvania. And then, you know, they decided early in 2022, 160 of their faculty decided to write an open letter complaining about the FBI's very successful China initiative, which is a counterintelligence program targeting hostile Chinese intelligence activities targeting U.S. universities. They complain about it, saying that it's, you know, biased and racially profiling. And after posting that letter, I guess they suddenly realized that most Chinese citizens are Asian. And, you know, how did the FBI miss that?
Yeah.
So they complain about this program that is materially impacting and affecting in a negative way Chinese intelligence operations in this country. And 2 weeks after complaining, Biden's DOJ tells the FBI to shut down the program.
Well, Fox and NBC. Oh, sorry. Go on. I didn't mean to.
No, go ahead.
Well, Fox and NBC say the first trove of documents that were found in his locked office in the closet there pertain to Ukraine, the UK, and Iran. Do you know any more about that?
No, not more than what's been publicized. Not much has been released on that. Obviously, Ukraine raises the antenna a little bit because the. You know, his son had dealings with Ukraine, business dealings, and Joe Biden was supposedly on point in the Obama administration for dealing with the Ukraine, which he did famously by having one of their prosecutors fired, a prosecutor who was looking into the activities of his son. All of this creates entanglements for Biden and his administration. And suddenly you start looking at the way the administration is handling China and some of the issues surrounding China and realizing, wow, you know, they're not being very aggressive against China in issues like, you know, fentanyl delivery through the cartels, the COVID origination and spread, the fact that China is trying to build two ports in the Western Hemisphere under our nose that are military capable in El Salvador and Argentina. You know, without pushback, you know, whatever happened to the Monroe Doctrine, you start to wonder, and then they squash this highly effective FBI counterintelligence program after their sponsor, the Penn Biden Penn sponsor, complains.
And also on the China piece too, Tucker Carlson reported earlier this week. Emails from Hunter Biden's laptop that are publicly accessible. One of them is a professor at Penn inviting Hunter Biden's daughter at the behest of some Chinese communist higher up to attend a conference in Beijing as their guest. And so, yeah, these entanglements between Biden Inc. and Ukraine and China. And then we have classified information reportedly, at least about Ukraine. Who knows if there are documents that relate to China as well, and all this money is being funneled to where Joe Biden gets a sinecure, an academic sinecure. Yeah, that does start to raise some questions. I hope the Department of Justice, that special counsel, will investigate pending his review of those documents.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we will.
But these are concerning, and you raise a good point there that you know, they're bending over backwards to curry favor with the Biden. So the storage, the casual and irresponsible storage of classified information at his home and at the Penn Biden Center, it becomes more intriguing once we know the nature of those documents. And was there information on those classified documents that helped support Hunter Biden's consulting arrangements that he had with entities in the Ukraine and in China? You know, were they kept on purpose, or were they, or was it truly an inadvertent storage? You know, there's no reason to bring classified document to the Penn Biden Center. There's nothing they can do with it. They can't even talk about what's on the documents with people who are not cleared. So why have them there in the first place?
Why were the documents separated out? You know, some over here in his office, some in the garage, one in another adjacent room to the garage.
Yeah. The American people must be just totally aghast at what appears to be some very casual handling of very sensitive documents, one of which was classified as SCI, special compartmented information. To get that clearance, you have to go through a rigorous counterintelligence polygraph, which I've been through. They're no fun. And so it is at the highest level of clearance. And to find that just, you know, included with a bunch of documents in a locked closet breaks every rule of storage there is.
Well, and the other thing too is this whole Biden has these documents at his home in his library, but he doesn't know what they are, and he's been advised by his attorneys to not ask about what they are. I mean, he acts like something he didn't know was there was discovered. Well, that's exactly what they're saying. They were inadvertently put there somehow by someone, and Biden doesn't know anything about them. That seems to me to strain the bounds of credulity as well.
It does. I hope he's right. He's in a difficult position to prove that position, and it's difficult to disprove it. But the merging of all of these, the confluence of these factors, where you have an incredible amount of money given to the University of Pennsylvania at the same time that they've established this Penn Biden Center and hired him as a professor. Later, he becomes president. People complain about a program that's hurting China, and it suddenly goes away because the Biden administration makes it go away.
That's a problem. It just smells. The other thing, too, is who made the decision to take the documents in the first place? So Biden wasn't apprised of that? There were no discussions about we're going to take these boxes of documents, they relate to these topic areas. He doesn't know anything about that. People just do things spontaneously around him that he doesn't know anything about, and he has other he doesn't have use for, or he doesn't lack use for them. They just happen.
Well, in his favor is the fact that we watched him for 2 years be very confused over a lot of things. And almost becomes believable.
Yeah. Right. Who was it? Gigante? Was that the mob boss that walked around Manhattan in a robe to try to convey that he was insane and so he couldn't be held legally culpable for what he did? Maybe that's what we're going to see next. Before we let you go, I wanted to tackle a couple other topics, too, that are FBI related.
Sure.
I hate to always make you defend the FBI, but the story out, and we can't forget about this. Last summer, after the Dobbs decision was leaked, there's 78 bombings to acts of vandalism against pro-life offices, pregnancy care centers around the country. And there have been zero arrests by the FBI. The pro-life community is so unimpressed with the FBI's efforts here that they're in the process of hiring their own private investigators to try to identify parties that are responsible. And, you know, so if a crossword is said at a school board meeting, then Ray and Garland are scrambling choppers in amphibious vehicles. You have 78 acts of vandalism against groups that are affiliated with a particular policy position, and nobody's interested.
I'm with you on this. I've written about it. It's one of my soapboxes. This speaks to the perception problem that the FBI has right now. You know, they'll send 20 armed agents in tactical gear to arrest a Catholic homeschool father who was protesting outside an abortion facility and got into a confrontation with one of the support staff there. he gets the full treatment of a tactical arrest early in the morning, and you've got nearly 100 attacks on pro-life pregnancy counseling centers and Catholic churches, vandalism, yeah. serious firebombings, that type of thing, and no arrest yet. The whole issue around Jane's Revenge, which claims credit for many of these attacks, sets up beautifully for the FBI's wheelhouse. This is what the FBI does. They determine if there's an organized group out there, no matter how loosely organized group out there, you know, creating or conducting domestic terrorism against U.S. entities. That's what the FBI does. That's what they're good at. This sets up well. It shouldn't be hard for the FBI to determine who's behind Jane's Revenge and start developing informants in that group, flipping people, and dismantling them under the RICO statutes of this country. The fact that it hasn't been done yet either indicates that these people are uncannily good, more so than any other domestic terrorism group that's existed in this country, or it's just not getting the full force of attention that it could be. Now, it could be that the FBI is conducting investigations, bringing cases to the U.S. attorney's offices, and they're just not getting the attention they need out of the Department of Justice. We don't know yet. I hope that's the case.
But it's
I wouldn't be surprised.
This is against the backdrop yesterday of 210 out of 211 House Democrats who voted against legislation that would mandate care for a child who is born alive and survives a botched abortion. So maybe the perspective of that party on that issue is informing the perspective of DOJ and or FBI on the issue of violence directed at Catholic churches and pro-life organizations. Gee, I wonder.
Right, and a similar number voted against a resolution to condemn the attacks on these pregnancy counseling centers and the Catholic churches. So, you know, it's when you've got a whole political party in unified against anything that could that they interpret as harming women's reproductive rights, that's a big pressure. And but, you know, the FBI traditionally has done the right thing and investigated crimes no matter who's behind it. And I hope this results in the same outcome. But it's frustrating right now.
He is Kevin Brock, former Assistant Director of Intelligence for the FBI, former Principal Deputy Director of the National Counterterrorism Center as well. Kevin Brock, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good talking to you guys.
Yeah, thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka, today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy.
Oh.
Do we need more women in public office? And I say that just because they're women. Got an interesting local story out of Lake Forest.
Oh, leafy Lake Forest.
Ah, suburban enclave.
Where your new next girlfriend lives.
Yeah. Okay, take it easy.
And for those who don't know this, a listener yesterday suggested a gal pal for Dan, and she lives in Lake Forest.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. We'll leave it there. Yeah.
Don't want to alienate listeners.
Okay.
More than I already do.
You're good at it, though.
Prudence Beidler. She admires her opponent for mayor of Lake Forest. His name is Dr. Randy Tack. When the two Lake Forest mayoral hopefuls served together on the city council, Prudence praised Dr. Randy's utter commitment to the community. She said he taught her to keep an open mind, how to look at things from a different point of view. Now, she said, it's time for Dr. Randy to go. She can't support him. Even though he secured the endorsement of the coveted endorsement of the Lake Forest Caucus in the fall. And it's not because she doesn't think that Dr. Randy would continue to do the good job that she says he's done, no.
What's the reason, then?
He's a dude.
Oh, the old gender card. We need more ladies. Is that
she told the Lake Forester, which is owned by the Tribune, so, you know, insert your fake news antennae here. I think there are real benefits that women bring. I happen to be a female, but I wouldn't say that's my only qualification. It's just the qualification she wants you to focus on for mayor. She hasn't offered up any policies that distinguish herself from Dr. Randy. She isn't disagreeing with Dr. Randy's policy vision for Lake Forest. And she hasn't, she's just instead seeking to rally Lake Forest women as a voting bloc to reject Dr. Randy because Dr. Randy is a dude.
312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
I think it's important for the city to have me, a woman, this time. I don't know if I'm a consensus builder just because I'm a woman or that it's just my style. Yeah. What do you think? What do you think? Let's vote. If it's a choice between a man and a woman, and I don't know much about either of them, or there's nothing that distinguishes the two, you know, they share the same policy views, should we just default to the woman?
I don't like her approach, I can tell you that much. But you said you've worked with male candidates and female candidates, and the female candidates do a good job, right?
Some of them do. I mean, yeah, I mean, people I've worked with, there are men I've worked with who I agree with more than some of the women I've worked with and for mm-hmm. as candidates. And the women were easier to deal with, I'd say that. But that's also anecdotal experience. This is a larger point. This is of the cliche that if only women ruled the world, there'd be no war. And then you actually look at the women heads of states and how many of them have taken their countries to war.
Exactly.
But anyway, I digress. That's the point is we're still in this because, well, still, we've actually, I don't know, doubled, we've advanced this by some exponent, this in the identitarian era, that we just need more women in office. We just need more people of color in office. And things will be better. Are they? Including for their constituencies. We used to have this conversation often with Professor Walter Williams, the econ professor at George Mason University, who has since passed, one of the great economists of the last 50 years, and a black man, for those not familiar with his work. You should be familiar with his work, and your kids should be familiar with his work. He would say, you know, you look around, you compare the late 60s in terms of the number of black Americans in public office to today, and the number of black Americans in public office is vastly increased. Has the situation for black Americans vastly increased? Well, across a wide range of measures in terms of economic power, in terms of educational attainment, no.
Not at all. Yeah.
So is it going to be any different with Prudence in Lake Forest than it is with Dr. Randy? There's no disagreement here. And the larger point is there's no disagreement. This isn't like one is has this vision, the other.
No. They have the same.
She is saying, vote for me because I'm a woman and it's time we have. I mean, this is very much like Hillary Clinton's articulation in a Democrat primary. It's time we had a woman. It's just time for a woman. It doesn't matter.
Well, let's look at the who cares about gender? Why even bring it up? But I guess she has nothing else.
Because it's a play. So the question is, if the choice is between a man and a woman, and you either know nothing about them or you know everything about them and you can't distinguish between the two because they share policy views and professional achievement and educational attainment, sort of like a college application, who do you choose?
Right.
Do you vote just based on gender because you're a woman? Because that's the value proposition that Prudence is offering. I'm a woman. It's time for a woman. It doesn't matter how good the incumbent dude has done. It's just time for a woman.
Well, we got a text message. Dan and Amy, is she hot?
She's 76 years old.
Oh.
So.
Sorry. I'm just reading the text message.
Great question. That's Dr. Randy is 64 years old, also not hot. They're equally not hot. So there again, do you vote for the woman or the man?
That's a good question. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline.
There's a lot more women in public office in Illinois than there were a few generations ago.
I mean, our mayor, our Cook County president, Cook County state's attorney, female.
Isn't it
Susana
going well?
Mendoza, everybody's, a lot of females.
It's going well, right?
Things are working out great.
As you've seen more women attain a public office, including executive positions in public office, the state of Illinois has vastly improved across all of the quality of life metrics that are important to you. Is that right? Schools, a lot more female. I mean, even not just the elective positions, but school board members, superintendents. The quality of K-12 education has improved.
Our CTU president, she's a female too.
And I'm not saying, this is not to imply the converse either. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that the political culture is what matters, not your non-behavioral identitarian characteristics, not your intersectional score. There are terrible women politicians in this state who've been party to destroying it, and terrible men. There are terrible honkies, and there are terrible blacks and Latinos and Asians and everybody else. It's been a concerted effort across every possible demographic to destroy this state, even as those quote-unquote underrepresented populations from a bygone era are now more represented and in some cases overrepresented. But you still want to play this game. And by the way, I understand why somebody like Prudence would play it, because identitarianism works in unenlightened states like Illinois and in unenlightened suburbs. I'm not going to accuse Lake Forest of being one because this election hasn't been held. There are many other examples of unenlightened suburbs with quote unquote highly educated populations.
Got another text message. And if you don't vote for me, you're a misogynist.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
of course.
There you go. That could help her.
Sure.
campaign.
And because there are so many P-hat men, male impersonators in these suburbs, to be called a name, well, that just descends a lot of these men into puddles of tears. So, yeah, she's got a twofer there. Vote for me for a woman. That's the carrot. And if you don't vote for me, here's the stick. You're a misogynist and you should be shunned from civil society. Melinda in Oak Forest.
Hi, Dan and Amy. I just wanted to mention that any woman running for office should be asked to define what a woman is.
Very good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
that's right. I thought, what about pronouns? We're not supposed to talk about gender.
Well, does anybody really know? Obviously, we have KBJ, Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. She doesn't know what a woman is.
That's right.
So how are, Lake Forest simpletons to be able to distinguish Dr. Randy from Prudence? Nobody knows what a woman is, except Prudence, apparently. Michelle in Lake Forest. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Michelle.
Hello.
Hi, Michelle.
Oh, Michelle, yes. I thought you said Joe. No. I'm actually sit on the caucus, and this has been a huge disruption to an 88-year-old institution. I personally didn't vote for Prudence. And I didn't know her or Randy Tack from Adam. She didn't interview well. So it had nothing to do with her gender. And she's on a mission to destroy an 88-year-old institution that has been in place in Lake Forest for that long.
Can I just follow up with a question, Michelle?
Sure.
Why do you hate women?
I guess I hate myself.
Yeah, stop beating yourself
up. All right. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks for the insight. Yeah.
Well, it's a woman's prerogative to change her mind about a caucus structure. She wants what she wants.
And she's
isn't
it
about time in this country a woman can express their ambition? Why am I the only feminist here? Amy, answer the question.
Sir. Yes, yes.
If you didn't know anything about Dr. Randy and Prudence, which you didn't, and neither did I until we started this conversation.
I wouldn't vote for her. I don't like her name.
There you go. Perfect.
I'm being completely honest.
I like Randy better than Prudence.
Randy's much better than Prudence, yes.
Ironically, Prudence is exercising imprudence. She's being imprudent. Isn't she?
Lots of phone calls here.
But it's just these women hating men like Jay on the North Side. Hey, Jay.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you doing?
Good. Prudence feel, or Randy? Dr. Randy, to you.
Well, I just feel people over the past decade have been voting for the wrong reasons. They're voting emotional, and this whole gender thing, it's out of control. I've always looked at the position like a job, and I feel that people need to look at their qualifications and their policies and vote strictly on that, not what they look like, what their skin color is, what their age.
What about their names? What about their names?
No,
not their first name.
You know what? It doesn't matter to me. I mean, I was raised that, you know, even if you don't like the person, respect the position. And I mean, I just think people are just too emotional, again, in the past decade, and they're voting for the wrong reasons. They're voting for somebody because they're young. They're voting for somebody because of their ethnicity and stuff like that. I'm like, that just, it's wrong. They need to look specifically at their qualifications and their policies and their histories and vote for those people on those reasons and those reasons only.
Thanks for the call, Jay. See, that's the problem. You have men like Jay who, you know, just got chipped out of an iceberg and talking about, you know, merit and assessing people based on their character or their skill sets or their policy decisions. I mean, we can't go back to that bad old time, can we? Prudence? Who wants a mayor of Prudence? Dr. Randy, he's a cisgendered honky. Maybe no mayor in Lake Forest. George in Naperville.
What type of footwear do they possess? Because women's legs look real sexy in high heels.
Yeah, I've noticed.
I don't know. It's a great question. Maybe you should go when the Plague of Women Vipers has their debate. Maybe you could go to that and ask that question. Thanks for the call, George. Right. Maybe Dr. Andy will be asked, you know, how bad do you want it? Are you willing to don some pumps?
What about identifying or changing your pronouns?
Yeah.
That might help.
Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I talked to Dennis Prager once, and this was about COVID, but I think it applies to this, where you have all these college-educated people in these areas doing these crazy things. And I mentioned to him, I said, the more college-educated people a society has, the weaker, more feeble, and easily brainwashed that society becomes. And he agreed 100% with that. Because all you got to, you know, these people are all doing these crazy, stupid things, and supposedly they're educated.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Rick. Well, I mean, that's certainly the story of the North Shore generally. I'm not including Lake Forest necessarily. And again, Lake Forest caucus endorsed Dr. Randy, so they didn't buy this vote for me or support me because I'm a woman deal. So that's worth noting. But yeah, I mean, it's the old saw that an idea so dumb only a professor could believe it. And, you know, and that's what you have a lot in these wealthy, educated areas, is you have a lot of people that are brainwashed to some extent. That's part of it. I think the bigger part of it is they're just huge cowards. They just have stuff they want to protect, and they just want to go along with whatever is popular. They don't want to rock the boat because they don't want to be targeted by these neo-Jacobin mobs. And so they just go along with all sorts of things that they actually know are insane, but they do it anyway because they're cowards. And by the way, that's not a legitimate excuse. That's not a compelling rationale.
Well, we got another juvenile text message. My guess is that Prudence has cankles.
I think Dr. Randy might, though, too. I don't know. I only see headshots.
I got to Google these people.
And, you know, they both are in, you know, professional suits. Nice, like, professional headshots.
From Lake Forest, they're not going to wear leisure wear or active wear.
Yeah.
It's beneath Maybe them.
Yeah, it's not right. I mean, it's not like Hinsdale where the men wear leggings, too.
Oh, yeah. God, it's so bad. Stop. Those are for us only. Please don't wear them. Please stop, men. Please stop carrying around your yoga mats. Just please.
It's so embarrassing.
Oh, God.
I want to apologize. It's not leggings because those are for women, but meggings are specifically made for men.
When did they start making Lululemon for men?
I wear Lululemon pants.
Oh, actually,
the golf pants are for men and they're very comfortable. They're quality golf pants.
All right, good. And you'll have them forever, I bet.
And I also don't have cankles. Bill in Cape Coral.
You know, I just hope this case doesn't go to the Supreme Court because, the justices don't even know the definition of a woman. How are they going to decide this case?
Yes, exactly. Well, we'll have to leave it to the voters of Lake Forest. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, continuing our discussion about identitarianism in a more serious way than the Lake Forest mayor's race. We talk a bit about the trans identitarianism as a social contagion, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest that. But the social contagion is not limited to the kids. Let me give you an example of this. Listen to this mom, courtesy of Libs of TikTok, talking about the identity of her kid and the row she is in with the school over the school's unwillingness to comply with her imposed identity on her kid, if you will.
The school district now is a nightmare. I go to enroll my child, and my kiddo is standing right there. I hand them the birth certificate, and I say, see right here, this is his sex. He is a boy. He goes by he, him. I had no issues at his past school, and I don't expect to have any issues here. And I swear, it was like Karen, the transphobic secretary, was just waiting on us that day. She said she wouldn't put my child in the school system as his name because it has to match a birth certificate. But again, had no issues at the last school. I told her I absolutely would not enroll my child as a female. And she said, you will and you are. She enrolled my child as a female, then sent mail to my house with my child's dead name on it. At this point, my child is supposed to start school on Monday and is enrolled in the system as a female. Every single teacher in the school knew about my child. And the students were told a little girl was coming to class. This is a visual representation of my mood. Like and follow for part three.
And she held up a monkey doll, the monkey doll with the symbols, like the angry face. I don't know if her daughter is suffering from gender dysphoria or she's the victim of some sort of Munchausen by proxy.
Glad that's not my mom.
Chloe Cole, one more example.
Oh, yeah.
Chloe Cole is somebody we've reported on before, this young woman who transitioned and then detransitioned and has become an outspoken advocate for detransitioning and for kids who are gender confused to not be led down a primrose path by doctors and others with less than their best interests at heart. She has sat down for an interview with Canadian psychiatrist Jordan Peterson and talked a little bit about where she is physically since her detransition. Pretty tough stuff. Take a listen.
I'll never have my breasts back. A reconstruction will do nothing for me, and it might make things worse actually, because I've had some complications pop up this year with the grafts. I have to cover them up with bandages or else they'll I don't know what's going on with them. I tried to consult my surgeon about it, and she didn't really investigate. He gave me advice that made the complications worse, even, and actually temporarily gave me an infection. But I have to bandage up every day so that it doesn't like leak all over my clothing or bedding. And
Jesus,
from the hormones and blockers. I've been experiencing some joint pains, mainly in my arms, my legs, and my back. And I still have issues with my urinary tract. I have to use the restroom pretty frequently. And I didn't even know that this was possible. This is like a pretty huge quality of life issue that I'm experiencing. And I'm just not really getting any help for it. And on top of that, I do hate to speak about it, but I'm experiencing sexual dysfunction at the age of 18. That's something that women usually go through when they're in their 40s to 50s.
Right, right.
How was I supposed to know?
How was I supposed to know? For more on this, pleased to be joined by our friend Lionel Shriver, contributor to The Spectator, best-selling author of We Need to Talk About Kevin, which was made into a good movie, and more recently, Abomination, selected essays from A Career of Courting Self-Destruction. Lionel Shriver, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's nice to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. You wrote a column recently, How We Created a Self-Hating Generation, that in part speaks to this identitarianism that we're discussing, and wanted to get your reaction to, for example, what you heard from Chloe Cole.
Well, I'm afraid that the ideologies that we're inflicting on children and adolescents these days are a collective cruelty. Not only are we tempting them to undertake surgery and hormone treatments that are not reversible, as they're often advertised, and potentially disfiguring their lives forever. But I think that we're presenting them with a version of self that is fundamentally what it is like to be a human being and grow up as a human being, that is ugly and deterministic and reductive. Identity politics tells them that all that really matters about them is that their race and their sexual orientation. And the transgender movement tells them that only they know who they are and that they are already fully formed people when they're born, and that their only job is to tell us what they are. And I think this is unkind, because the truth is, what I remember from being a young child is a kind of formlessness and openness and uncertainty. You know, when at that age you're trying to figure things out, and the last thing you need to be told is that only you know who you are, and you have to tell us. It's a terrible burden. And I think both these movements are deterministic, and they're basically saying that you have no control over who you are. And I would contrast that to the version of identity that I grew up with, which was, it was something that you formed. Character was built. And over the years, you didn't just learn who you were. It wasn't just a discovery process, but it was an active process of deciding who you wanted to be, and therefore going out and achieving that. I wanted to be a writer, and I achieved that, and it was hard. And the fact it was hard was one of the things that made it so gratifying when I started being able to publish my work. I like the idea of identity as not only not defined by race and sexual orientation, but also as something that is active throughout your life, that it's a project, and it's a project that is never finished. And I don't expect to be exactly the same person in another 10 or 20 years any more than I feel as if I'm exactly the same person than I was 10 or 20 years ago. We change, and it's exciting and interesting, and it's something that over which you exert influence. Now, I certainly grant that we all have a certain essential nature when we're born. We don't have total control. I use the example of, you know, I was good at math until I hit second year calculus. I couldn't get anywhere. So I would never have made a nuclear physicist. There are a whole range of
science-based futures that were closed off to me. But beyond that, I was able to develop the skills that were innate and to, you know, to undertake self-improvement. And we've just abandoned that entire language.
You're right. I love this phrase from your piece about the cultural mavens. Their sole mission is to tell us what those selves are already are with respect to kids. Self is a prefabricated house to which only its owner has a key. And so contrast that a little bit more, not so much necessarily with professional development, because professional development flows from character development and that character building process that kids undergo through school and parenting and interactions with their friends and life experience.
Yes. Falling in love, making commitments to other people, getting married, going through misery even. We used to find adversity character building. You know, the Army used to advertise itself as character building, that yes, it was going to be difficult. Yes, it could at times be unpleasant, but on the other side, you would come out a fuller and stronger human being. And I worry that in this more deterministic model of what it means to be a person, that we're stunting people and we're also depressing them. Because I think young people told that, you know, they just have to look inside and in their prefabricated house, look around and tell us what the layout is.
And we're only...
They look inside and they don't find much. Of course they don't. They're young. Nothing has happened to them yet. They haven't made any major life decisions. Why would they know who they are?
And adults
and the expectation that they have to know already everything about themselves, and they are already fully formed what they are, and they look inside themselves, and there isn't much there, and they get depressed. And they get anxious that there's something wrong with them.
And then the adults are here. We're told that we're here as adults only to affirm whatever they come up with rather than to inform what they are thinking with some of our own judgments that are tempered through life experience and that same character building.
Yes, which is a total abdication of responsibility. I mean, adults no longer act like adults anymore. They subjugate themselves to children and just want to please the kids. And that is not kind. And you need to offer, it sounds old-fashioned, but we could stand a little more old-fashioned. We need to offer young people guidance and tell them more about the world and give them options. Explain what some of the consequences are with different choices, but simply throwing people who don't know anything about the world onto that world with no indication of what's right and what's wrong, that's mean. I think it's actually mean.
You're right to this point. I prefer to spend time with me in the present than with me at 35. I know more. My sense of humor is sharper. I'd rather, to my surprise, I'm humbler, you know, because you develop more perspective the more that you go through. And so why would you deprive your kid of that? I mean, it's just it's amazing to me that political pressure, the political pressure of a political party you affiliate with, for example, can lead so many to abandon so much that they could otherwise be conferring to their kids.
Well, I think we're going through a very grim political time. And for once, I'm not talking about the divisions between Democrats and Republicans. I think that we are busy trying to not pass any judgment anymore. And that means that there is no moral order. And the destigmatization of everything from prostitution to obesity is not necessarily a good thing. You know, yes, being stigmatized is not a pleasant experience, but there's a reason that there these things are have been traditionally stigmatized. Stigma is really gentle manipulation, if you will. Yes, you can have a child out of wedlock. It's not illegal, but we're not going to think well of you. Of course, we're way beyond that. But I think that parents in particular, as well as the larger society, ironically has to get more judgmental and to say, you know what, if you weigh 400 pounds, your health is going to be impaired, and you're probably not going to be as happy as if you weighed half that. But instead, we have embraced an anything goes thing that clearly is derives from my own upbringing. You know, I grew up during the 60s and early 70s, and you know, there was a whole movement toward permissiveness, and I think that permissiveness is now completely out of control. So it's my generation is responsible for initiating it.
We have a nihilism problem.
You know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then your it cannibalizes itself. So we were talking about this earlier this week. On the one hand, you have leftists saying to criticize somebody for being fat is racist because and specifically targets black women because of their physiognomy and so on and so forth. So that's racist. On the other hand, we have the American Academy of Pediatrics recommending that fat kids that are pre-diabetic get on medication at 12 and have the lap band surgery at 13.
Yeah, well, we are denying the reality of personal responsibility, and then when we have to live with the consequences of absence of personal responsibility, our answer is medication. It's not revising the behavior.
Well,
all behavior is okay as long as it hails from who you truly are.
Right.
Well, it's taking the easy way out, not teaching, you know, self-discipline. You know, take this pill, it'll get better. Get this surgery and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, there's a study out yesterday that antidepressants work about, you know, have about 15% of the time they have more impact than sugar pills. So sugar pills was the placebo. Antidepressants is this, you know, the pharma solution to feeling blue. And yet the incremental effectiveness is, you know, 15%.
I think the effect is hugely one of the placebo.
Yeah.
And well, right, but precisely. And so, I mean, do you see any bright spots in terms of recognition in circles that we need to go back to the character building paradigm and get away from this nihilistic paradigm?
I don't see. I'm not happy on the adult front. At a certain point, I think young people themselves are going to have to get a grip, and you know, I'm a little worried about Gen Z, but maybe the people coming up behind them will reject this whole ideology in the same way that generations traditionally do reject whatever was fashionable in their parents' time. I've been discouraged that the identity politics movement seems to have transferred between generations, and that's contrary to the standard model that, you know, adolescents are rebellious and think everything that their parents go on about is rubbish.
They got a pill for
and
that
I'd
rebellion.
I'd like to see a little more adolescent rebellion, because the ideology we're talking about, it seems new, but it isn't. It's been around for quite some time. It's just become more entrenched.
She is Lionel Fudd.
We need adolescents to start acting like proper teenagers.
It's kind of a funny way to put it. I like that, though. Yeah. Start being the rebellious teenagers we used to decry. Exactly. Lionel Shriver, contributor to The Spectator, best-selling author of We Need to Talk About Kevin, which it was made into a movie featuring Tilda Swinton that you should check out if you haven't. Most recently, the book Abomination, Selected Essays from a Career of Courting Self-Destruction. Lionel Shriver, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It is Open Mic Friday. Taking your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Comments, compliments, concerns, general crack pottery, we'll take it all. Get to as many calls as we can. So if the lines are busy, which I think they are, please be patient. Amy, I'll surrender the floor
Thank
to you.
You
to offer a eulogy for Lisa Marie.
54 years old. I mean, I just saw her at the Golden Globes when Austin Butler won for his performance in Elvis, which was a great movie. I know you saw it as well.
Yeah, very good.
And I'm just heartbroken. 54 years old, her poor mother. And she woke up, her stomach was hurting. And after her ex-husband came home from dropping the kids off at school, she was in the closet and she had a sudden cardiac arrest.
Well, she felt ill at the Golden Globes, the reports go. I mean, you know.
It's the king's daughter.
Yeah, only daughter, which is also interesting. But 54,
That's young.
She's sort of a wreck, though, wasn't she, in her life? I mean,
addicted to drugs. She went to rehab 5 times.
She married Michael Jackson. There's no woman in their right mind who marries Michael Jackson.
She was friends with him since she was 7 years old. Remember, she was 9 when her dad died.
So what?
I think it's worse that she married Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage loved Elvis so much that he married the best thing, his only daughter.
Did you see that documentary about Michael Jackson and you want to say marrying Nick Cage was worse? I don't think so.
All right, you're right. But here's one of her songs. Can I play this for you? Just because she's talented, okay? She was a musician and a songwriter in her own right.
You can be alright.
Help shine. Bad, huh? A little auto-tune maybe to help it along?
I had to chuckle at the Wall Street Journal obituary, which recounted that she recorded 2 or 3 studio albums that had some success. But the Wall Street Journal reporting, but her success was overshadowed by her famous father. Oh, really?
Really?
Was it?
You don't say?
I mean, it's sad. It's a sad thing. But I think she's a good example of how poisonous fame is, particularly if you're famous from the day you're born. And I just don't think that fame served her well.
Yeah. And we'll find out. You know, people are wondering, was she vaccinated and all that?
Uh-huh.
Because I know we had Bob Snyder on from Jenny's Mission yesterday. 400,000 people a year just die from sudden cardiac arrest. But I feel like more and more deaths are happening. I don't know.
Well, I don't know that this was a healthy 54-year-old as contrasted from, like, very healthy, in-shape 21-year-olds or Bob Snyder's daughter who died on a soccer field. We'll have to wait to hear more. I mean,
we'll
obviously, it's a tragic occurrence, but there's some context here.
I almost didn't come to work today. I was so distraught. I didn't sleep last night. It's awful. What's wrong with me? Can you tell me?
I'm going to leave that to callers. What's wrong with Amy? Bob Buffalo Grove, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. Thanks for getting to me. As I missed talking to you early this morning when you were discussing the Biden documents and played that great Hank Johnson soundbite. What a moron. And he's a congressman. But there's more.
Those two things are not. Those two things are hardly mutually exclusive, by the way. But go ahead.
There's more. The ladies of The View.
I have it here.
Those aren't ladies.
Offered the same thing.
I've never seen a luckier person than Donald Trump. Just as we're this close to getting him, but somehow these documents appear.
Oh, my God. I'd rather listen to Lisa Marie Presley than that cacophony. Good grief. Go ahead, Bob.
And then this weekend, I'll be watching Sunday News. I'm just wondering how good old Chucky Toad and Georgie Stephanopoulos and their biased panel discussions will spin this. Now I heard a reference to a garage gate. How are they going to spin this thing?
Thanks for the call, Bob. It's very simple. Repeat after me, won't you? Mm-hmm. Joe Biden takes classified information very seriously. The classified information was inadvertently put in places it didn't belong many times, and they have been completely transparent about classified information.
Even though they were discovered in November, and then the latest trove of documents were found in December, December 20th. And now we're just learning about it, and they knew about it, and they lied about the second set of documents. So
I know many Corvette owners, including of vintage Corvettes, and I'm sure they will agree that they take care of their vet like it is classified information, like it is America's Secret. So if you put the classified documents with his vet, or somebody did, then that is the highest standard of care one can offer for classified documents. Yeah. That's my defense.
As you mentioned earlier, who's got the garage door opener?
Mm-hmm. Or openers. Dun, right. Dun, dun. Kevin in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, I was curious. Couple things. First, I want to thank you for making me look up the Munchausen syndrome, and I remember
Munchausen
understanding what it was.
Yeah,
right. And it's just as far as making things up to get attention. That seems a lot of liberals do.
Well, it's Munchausen by proxy is parents hurting their children to get attention, right, which is the suggestion I made about that ghastly woman talking about her kids' pronouns and so forth. But anyway,
yeah, instead of preparing her child for the world. And one other thing. Why are people talking about me? I hear there was a book written about it, and I just don't know what that is.
Why are people talking about me? What?
Yeah, why are people talking about Kevin?
No, we have to talk about Kevin.
Okay. Yeah, all right, I'm sorry. Maybe.
By Lionel Shriver. It's a good book, and as I said, it was made into a movie starring Tilda Swinton. So, yes.
I guess that just didn't go over well. I was told that would have been funny by your call screener. Anyway, one other thing I want to
feeding
you jokes.
Do not trust Quinn's sense of humor.
He's a joke, and he said, "Oh, I got to put that in. You got to say that." Yeah. Anyhow, maybe they're talking about me because we have to get more people on the grassroots level to get involved. I think York Township, last time I saw it, had 28 people who were not precinct captains. To start changing the culture now is for Republicans who listen to you, who are fellow travelers, to get involved. And then one, if you can answer the question, what's the state of play with the Illinois Republicans? I love your show. I get to listen to Chicago accents while I'm down here in Austin, Texas. And I have people telling me that my hard A's are coming out harder when I say absolutely and fantastic.
Sound like Dennis Franz to those Texans, don't you? Thanks for the call, Kevin. First of all, Kevin from Austin, Texas, the only resident of Austin, Texas, who has granular knowledge of what's going on in DuPage County Township.
Yes.
The Illinois Republican Party, still a legal fiction, does not exist, has no leadership, has no discernible rationale, policy agenda. So I guess it's a wait and see, as it's been for, 25 years. Will Skokie.
Hey, how you doing? I find it very interesting that whenever Democrats have issues, like when they want somebody to come in and clean up or something like this, they always hire lawyers to do it. They don't hire, cleanup people, because...
Where's Wolf when you need him?
Yeah. The problem that occurs, number one, they can't testify. And number two, Why always lawyers? Why can't they? And do the lawyers who actually clean this stuff up, do they have security clearance? So they're looking through documents to see if they're security documents, but yet they don't have security clearance to actually look at the documents. Very strange.
Maybe some White House counsel may, but yeah, all right. I agree. I would have called Harvey Keitel too. Ralph and Rantoul.
Good morning, Dan. Earlier you mentioned the poison of fame. I agree.
I've worked tirelessly my entire life to avoid fame, and so far I've achieved nothing, and nobody knows me, and when I die, I'll leave nothing and be remembered by no one.
You've done well.
Yes.
Good and faithful servant. Yes. All right, Ralph. See, that's funny.
Yes.
Kevin and Austin, take some instruction from Ralph. Dave in Racine, Wisconsin.
Greetings.
What about salutations?
Well, with the protest by women athletes at the NCAA meeting, I just thought of this. If they're going to allow gender dysphoric males to compete against gender dysphoric or biological females, maybe, which I think is de facto cheating, maybe we shouldn't trust other NCAA events like, you know, the basketball tournaments or the bowl games, you know, to see if they might be fixed also.
Oh, thanks for the call, Dave. The ladies want their NIL money or what? Is that what they're complaining about now? Title IX wasn't enough. Now they want their NIL money, even though nobody watches women's sports. Nobody? No? Nothing? Nobody wants to defend? All right. Eduardo in Midway.
Yeah, good morning, Dan and Amy. You were talking about obesity in children early in the week. They need to go through 2 years of boot camp. They need to eat better. They need to eat before 6:30 because I've been hearing about that. And even reading like Reader's Digest, but I know that's kind of like old timers reading. But reading and sleeping by 10 p.m., all those things. But they're on social media. See, we're from Generation X. We didn't have all that. So
you're Generation X and you read Reader's Digest? Were you looking for casserole recipes? What are you,
doing?
Eduardo, up your game. Thanks for the call.
Move on.
Boy. Readers Rich, Indian Digest. Head Park.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Hi.
I think the problem that we have in this country is we no longer vote for the best people in politics and in different positions in schools and stuff. I think it's all based now on whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're black or white, or whether you're gay or straight. I think we need to get back to getting people in positions that are going to help the people in their daily lives and not base it on gender or race or sexuality.
I agree. Thanks for the call, Rich. By the way, the Republican Party is not just is also guilty of playing identity politics. And dysfunctional, vestigial Republican parties like the one in Illinois are some of the worst offenders, and it's the reason they're irrelevant, is because you're going to out-left the left. Right. The point here is to provide a contrasting vision for your party and thus how that would inform the public policy choices you make and the kind of society we live in. This is sort of a 101 axiom that seems to evade so many Republican Party officials, particularly in Illinois. Steve, Orland Park.
Good morning. I've noticed a politician will run for an office, win that office, and partway through their term, run for a different position instead and not fulfill their term in the first office they were voted in for. I think this should be unlawful. I'd like to know what your thoughts and feelings are about this.
Thanks for the call, Steve. I wouldn't make it unlawful. People can freely run for office, but you know, maybe what you could do is you have to resign your current office to run for the next, because that's a huge advantage for an incumbent, where they don't have to worry about, for example, their salary, because they're on salary at the state or whatever their position while they're running for another office. And people who come from the private sector have to figure out how they can be a full-time candidate. So you marginalize people that are not independently wealthy from entering the political arena from the outside, advantaging those on the inside. So I wouldn't say you have to fulfill your term, but I would say that I would be supportive of something that requires, whether it's Ron DeSantis or J.B. Pritzker, you want to run for president? Go ahead. But that's a full-time job. We all know that, being a candidate. And so as soon as you go full-time as a candidate for an office that's not the one you currently hold, then you resign that office. Ed in Chicago Heights.
Hi.
Hey, Ed.
Hey, just wondering your NFL wild card weekend picks. I promise I won't fade you like Billy Walters might.
Well,
we have, Dan.
Is there any upsets in the making? I don't think so. So Dallas over Tampa Bay, that's easy. Minnesota over Seattle, I think. I'm fading on the matchups. Who are the AFC matchups? San Diego could be an upset. Who does San Diego have again? Or LA now, the Chargers?
Yeah, it's LA now against the Jaguars and Clemson's Trevor Lawrence, that number one QB pick from a year ago.
I think, but San Diego's a wild card. The Jags are the division winner, but the Jags, I assume, are going to be the underdog. I like the Jags there. That's my only upset pick, I think. I think everything else holds serve, don't you?
So you think San Francisco kills Seattle?
Yeah.
You think Minnesota?
San Francisco, Seattle, Minnesota, and who does Minnesota have again?
Minnesota's playing New York Giants.
Yeah, Minnesota beats the Giants. Yeah, Minnesota beats the Giants.
And you think Prescott will beat Brady?
Well, it's not Prescott versus Brady. It's, Tampa Bay can't score. And,
true.
Unless Mike Evans, unless they can sort of rekindle Mike Evans as a deep threat in that game, I don't see Tampa having a chance against the Cowboys, even though I hate the Cowboys. So, yeah, I think the Jags would be the only upset I'd pick.
And you'd say Cincinnati over the Ravens?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati has a good chance to win it all.
And what about Buffalo, Bill, Miami? Bills, right?
Yeah, Bills. Yeah. I think Tua's out, isn't he? Is Tua playing for the Dolphins?
No, he's out.
Yeah, so there's they have no chance. So, yeah, I think I would say, so those are my picks. The only upside would be the Jags, and I think, I'm going to say it. I think the Bengals win the whole thing. How about that?
The Bengals are going to win the Super Bowl?
I do. Okay. Joe Burrow's going to win. All right, you heard it here first. And I think going down the stretch when there were still a couple of weeks left, I think like the Bengals were an 8-1 dog to win the whole thing. And boy, that was attractive to me. If I was still partaking in games of chance like that, I would have put money on that.
Well, that's sports investment, and that's what Sean Thompson hates.
Sports investment. Yes, that's a better way. I like that better than gambling. Sports investment. Yes, very good. All right, Ed, Godspeed this weekend. Very good.
That laugh of his.
Dawn, Naperville.
You sound like Pet Summerall. Anyway,
thank you very much. The late
you're
great.
Welcome. So on Tuesday, January 10th, the Advocacy Institute came out with their state-by-state graduation rates for students with disabilities for school year 2019 and 2020. So when I looked it up and I went to go look for Illinois, the information was blank. There was no data to report at all. So when I questioned the individual who posted the report, her reply was the data was suppressed due to concerns with data quality. So I have another email out to her to clarify, you know, like what they're, you know, how they're determining that, but I thought that might be an interesting article for WirePoints or ProPublica to look into as to how, because their reporting is mandated by ESSA. So,
You know what I think is going on there? You have what? Illinois high school grads that are in charge of the data collection. And that's the Dawn and Maple, thank you. Chuck and Delavan to close it out.
Hey, I am completely upset about this whole thing with Dr. Jill. Her civil rights, 14th Amendment, was violated. You cannot deny a person within his jurisdiction the equal protection of the law. She did not have her underpants drawer going into. Amy has complained to me about talking about Melania's underpants drawer, but I have to bring it back up. Fair is fair. When is the FBI going to go in?
They went through Barron's room, too.
No, that's
true. Well, they're not going to go through Hunter's room, but I'm very distraught about this whole thing. The 14th Amendment, it's been violated. I want to get the FBI on this right now.
Well, that's a great point, Ed. That's a great point that Jill Biden's underwear drawer should be rifled through as well. Very good point. Yeah, fair is fair. Very good. All right. That's a wrap.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.